You remember that emotion that you had when you first realized that the dreams that you had for your life weren't going to work out like you wanted them to? All of us can relate to that. Maybe it wasn't the desire to fly as a kid, then you realized that you couldn't. Maybe it's even deeper than that or more profound than that. Maybe you had an idea for the way your future was going to go with your profession. Or maybe you had an idea of the way your family was going to look. Or maybe you had an idea of the way your health was going to be, and it just hasn't turned out that way. And that's really what this movie is about. This movie called Wonder is really about a group of people, a family unit, that didn't foresee this in their future. But all of a sudden, now they're faced with a reality trying to figure out, what now? How do we, maybe to put it this way, how do we face a world that doesn't know how to face us back? Maybe you're trying to figure that out. How do you face a world that doesn't know how to face you back? That's really what today is all about. We're mixing things up a little bit today. We usually do some singing on the front end, but we're going to do that on the back end today. But I'm just really grateful that you're here, that you're watching, wherever you are, if you're here at North Point, or if you're watching at one of our partner churches. This is awesome to me, but we've got churches all over the place that are connecting with us during this series. We've titled the series, Three Things I Learned from a Movie I Didn't Want to See. Now, before you judge me and go, well, why didn't you want to see it? What's your problem? I don't like feeling sad. Is that so bad? I have learned some of you don't like that either. In fact, I've talked to a number of you over the past couple of weeks from the moment we launched this idea that said, yeah, I heard about that movie. I didn't want to see it either. I had somebody who came up to me and they said, hey, you must be an Enneagram number 7. I was like, what in the world? How did you know that? Because I am. That's an enthusiast. And they said, oh, because enthusiasts don't enjoy feeling sad. I'm like, well, who does? But evidently, there's some people that do enjoy feeling sad. But I learned that this movie is more than just a movie that, yeah, there are moments where you feel sad. If you don't cry during Wonder, you should probably figure out what is wrong with your hardened heart. However, it's more than just that. There's a lot going on in this movie. There's so much that I learned. And so what we're going to do during the series is we're just going to look at three things that are to be learned from this really fantastic story. Wonder was a movie that was really put together based on this best-selling novel. And the novel was written by an author who has said that she wasn't necessarily writing about a specific person. So this is not even necessarily based on a true story, but there are plenty of people that are a part of our church that have kids that have been born with Treacher's-Collins syndrome, that have had numerous surgeries just to be able to live. And that's Augie Pullman's story. But today's not about trying to make any one of us feel guilty. It's not about trying to make any one of us feel just sad. And yet at the same time, I don't want to minimize any kind of struggle that anyone has either. Today's really about a day to figure out what is it that connects us and how can we be more responsible. It's really about a day about all of our weaknesses, because every one of us has some form of obstacle or roadblock or circumstance that has jumped into our way that has made it difficult to face a world that might not know how to face us. Today's really about all of our weaknesses and then how we should respond to them, because that is what really connects us all. When I got done with this movie, I had this discussion with a number of people, a bunch of them on our team here, trying to answer this question: why was Augie such a wonder? You do get to the end of this movie and you think, wow, what an amazing kid. He really is such a wonder. And there's a line at the end of this movie where he's sitting next to his mom at this school assembly, this kind of a moment where they hand out awards for the year. And he looks up at his mom and he says, Mom, thanks for making me. She says, Augie, what are you talking about? And he says, I didn't want to go. And you made me go to school. Thank you. I'm really glad I went. And it's this really tender, touching moment. And the mom looks at Augie and she says, Augie, you're such a wonder. You really are a wonder. And that's the line I want us to look at today. Every week we're going to pick a different quote to talk about. And today I want to talk about this line right here. You are a wonder. And by the end of our time together, what I'm hoping that you might be courageous enough to do is even to put your name, is to envision your name, that you really are a wonder. Because it is true that you really are a wonder. I really do. All of us have the opportunity to be a wonder. Because what I have learned is that being a wonder is not so much about what's been handed to you. No, what was handed to Augie, that, yes, made him a wonder, but it was so much more than that. No, it was the way he handled what was handed to him. Sure, the stares and the jeers and the embarrassment, far beyond what most of us could even comprehend, but all of our lives, every single one of us has faced some sort of wind that has blown against us, a headwind of difficulty, maybe brought about by our own decisions, or some sort of gale-forced wind of adversity, maybe due to circumstances that we never, ever could have even seen coming. No, Augie wasn't a wonder because of what was handed to him. He was a wonder because he was alive, but it's so much more than that. He was a wonder because of how he handled what was handed him. And the same thing can be true of you. Being a wonder is about so much more than the hand you were dealt. So the question for all of us is, how should we, maybe how do we respond to adverse situations? How should we respond? How could we respond? What is our typical nature in regards to responding to adversity? That's really what today is about. And my hope is by the end is that maybe you would see a pathway from where you are right now to what it might look like for you to respond in such a way that people would say, wow, you really are a wonder. Instead of me just sharing my own opinions about these, which I would sincerely love to do, I'm going to actually talk specifically from a part of the New Testament. It's part of a letter that the Apostle Paul wrote. He wrote two, maybe three letters. We at least have two of them to this group of people, group of Jesus followers in this little city called Corinth. And we're going to look at his second letter, this one little excerpt where he talks about something difficult that had happened to him. And then he talks about how he has found the strength to be able to get over it, to be able to get past it, to not just get through it, but to actually thrive in the middle of it. I don't know what your faith story is. We've got people from all over the map, which is really awesome about our church. We've got some people that you've been a Jesus follower for as long as you can remember, and we've got some people that aren't even sure if they believe that there is a God who exists. And if that's you, if you find yourself in the camp where you're not quite sure what you believe, I just want to tell you, I think what the Apostle Paul has written can be really helpful to you. I think you're welcome to apply it. I think it can be very interesting. But I also think for those of you that are Jesus followers, you're going to listen to this, you're going to hopefully read this, and you're going to go, wow, that really is the only option for me. That's the only option that could allow me to get through whatever adversity you're facing. Here's what he said. This is found in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. He said this. He said, therefore, in order to keep me from being conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh. I was given an ailment. I was given this condition. We don't exactly know what it is. We've tried to piece together context clues from other things that Paul has written. But our best guess is that it was probably some sort of physical pain that he had. Maybe something like migraines. Maybe some kind of eye pain, something that could have caused headaches. But it was probably something that caused physical discomfort. I love that he calls it a messenger of Satan. Some of you have kids who are a thorn in your flesh, but I don't think you would call them a messenger of Satan. Maybe you would. If so, hey, you do you, boo-boo. You know, whatever you need to do to get through it. But in his case, it was some sort of physical ailment that he felt, probably. Some sort of pain that was causing him problems, that was bothering him. For those of you that have something maybe right now, some sort of health diagnosis, you can probably relate. And what's interesting to me is, I know a lot of times we sit in religious services like this and we think, well, maybe the answer is I should just accept it and go, okay, well, this is just God's lot for me. This is the plot that's been written for my life. I guess I should just accept this, as this is just a part of my life. But what's really awesome to me is that that's not what Paul does. Paul doesn't just accept it. No, look at what he says next. He said, three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. Now, this probably doesn't just mean three literal times. He's using this repetitive language to emphasize that I have asked God numerous times to take this away. Maybe it was three intense seasons of suffering where he asked him to take this away. Some of you can relate to this. Maybe you have been through recently, maybe a divorce, or maybe a job loss, or maybe some sort of relational breakup in your family. Or maybe somebody's got some sort of addiction that continues to pop its head up in your life. Or maybe it is some sort of pain that you're dealing with. And you've had seasons of your life where you have begged God, down on your knees, God, please take this away from me. This thorn in your flesh, maybe it's been genuinely tormenting you. And in Paul's case, it didn't seem like God removed it. But the good news is that God did seem to answer his prayer. Sometimes it's difficult. It's most difficult when we don't get an answer. We feel like, God, I begged you and I begged you and I begged you, and it just continues to persist. But in Paul's case, he felt like God gave him an answer. He felt like God spoke back to him and said, hey, I want to show you how you could think about your situation that would actually help you to navigate your situation. And that's so true. You've heard that a change in perspective really can change everything. Well, what Paul's going to introduce to us is a change in perspective. Here's what he said. His response after he begged God, please take this away from me. He said, but God said to me, he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. What is God's grace? Well, it's in Paul's case, it was whatever he needed in the moment. That God's grace in this context is, it's God's provision for what we need. God actually gave Paul at every step along the way just what he needed to be able to get by. That doesn't feel very good though, does it? Because I'm sure he had moments where he was like, I don't want your grace. I want you to get rid of it. I want your power, you know? I want you to remove it from my life. But how many times have we all experienced that where we go, you know what? I feel like I'm getting enough to be able to get by, but that's not what I want. But that's not what God's grace is. God's grace really is, it's what we need to get by. It's what we need to get through. It's what we need to move on. It's what we need to continue to move, period. See, we all have different prayers for different things. I mean, some of you maybe right now, you're praying for a new job. Some of you were praying that today that you might meet someone. Some of you are praying for a new car, maybe a Lamborghini, and go for it. I mean, this is honestly awesome. I've had people that have said, hey, I am praying for a Lamborghini. Would you pray with me? And my answer is, sure, I'll pray with you for a Lamborghini. Like, God, give this person a Lambo and help them to be generous with it and let me borrow it on date nights. That would be baller. You know what I mean? I would love that. But you all know that sometimes God answers our prayers not with what we want, but with what we need, because sometimes our situations are so bad that the Lamborghini's not actually what we need. The Lamborghini's not actually going to fix our situation. And so sometimes God gives us what we actually need, not just what we want. We all know this. So what is grace? I mean, grace is God's provision for what we need. It's mercy. And it's kindness, and it's energy, and it's our sustenance, and it's literally him providing, and it's the endurance to be able to make it another day, and the perseverance for us to be able to get through another day. But he doesn't just give us what we need. He gives us what we need when we need it most. He's a loving father. And he speaks back to Paul, and he says, Paul, I hate that you're struggling with what you're struggling with. I'm going to answer your prayer maybe in a different way than you would have thought, and I'm going to give you my grace, which is sufficient for you. It will be enough. Whatever you need most, God's going to meet that need in the moment, even though it might not be what you want it to be, even though it might not be what you're hoping for it to be. His answer that he got back from God was this: my grace is sufficient for you, for my power, this is interesting to me, my power is made perfect in weakness. How about you just make your power perfect when I ask for it? That would be pretty awesome, but that's not the way it works. No, see, what do we want usually when we have a difficult situation? More often than not, we just want an explanation. Most of the time, an explanation is really most of what we're looking for. I just want to know, why is this happening? How long is it going to be here? And where are we headed? That's all we need to know. But God very rarely gives us explanations. No, what's amazing to me, even in his answer, God doesn't explain the thorn in his flesh. God just tells him, listen, Paul, my grace will be sufficient for you. And then he makes him a promise. He says, in your weakness, you will feel my power. My power is made perfect. It's made complete in your weakness. But we don't like that. We don't like it because we like explanations, not promises. But I have found that we've got to learn how to live on the promises of God and not depend on the explanations from God. I'm telling you, this would be huge for you if you could learn to live on the promises that he's given us and not demand or depend on an explanation from him. It will allow you to see your thorn in your flesh a little bit differently. What are the promises that he's promised us? Well, he's promised us that he'll be with us, that he'll never leave us. He's promised us that he will show up with what we need most when we need it most. But he's also promised that he will use our situation to do something good through it. This is amazing to me that God does this. In fact, if you're not a Jesus follower, if you're not a person of faith, you could get through your situation. I mean, people have gotten through loads of stuff. But I don't know how you get through your situation without the faith and the hope that God makes something good through it. I mean, to me, it's the only way to look at all the bad in our world. It's the only way to see all the bad in my own life is to know that he will use it somehow. Even if I can't understand it, even if I don't get it, even if I can never comprehend it, he promises I will use it. I might not take it out of your life, but you can bank on the fact that I will use it. And just because you don't understand it, it doesn't mean he won't use it. He will use it in your life even when you don't see it, even when you don't know he's using it, and even when you can't understand why it's even there. This is what he does. For me, the most recent examples of this, and I know my examples, they will be trite compared to some of the stuff that you're going through. Last summer, we had lightning strike our house. That's no joke, though. That's pretty serious. Our kids are still scared to death at night, and that's not cool at all because they want to try to come sleep in our room, which the answer is no, you can't do that. But anyway, they'll have to figure it out, you know, but they'll work it out with a counselor when they get to be an adult, hopefully. However, it was awful. And what was awful about it was, and some of you know this to be true, everything in our house changed. I mean, everything was reset, literally like demons in our house, right? And you know that phrase, like, wow, like, it's amazing, you know, you really struck gold, I guess would be even better, but that man, lightning must have striked in your life, because that's amazing that that happens. Like, I wish I would have won the lottery. That would have been like lightning striking, you know, but the chances of this happening were so slim, and it messed everything up. Well, through the process, I got to know the company that was helping to do our restoration. I got to know them because I was calling them a lot, asking them to do some different things. And so as I got to know them, I started to build a relationship with them, and next week, I'm actually going to the company to talk to them about some leadership stuff, which I was so excited about. And the only reason why I said yes to it is because I felt like maybe this is some of the good that God was trying to orchestrate. And the way that he saw to make that good happen was to allow our house to be struck by lightning. Now, I wish there were 100 other ways that he could have orchestrated this to happen, but for whatever reason, this is the path he chose. And I want to be able to see the good that he wants to bring from all this craziness. Just last week, I had another bizarre thing happen. My car was stolen. That's wild. That's really unusual. And I I place the majority of the blame on the person who stole my car. I say the majority of the blame because I left my keys in my car. So some of the blame rests on me, okay? But a really small amount. Who steals a car, you know? Is this yours? No, then leave it here. That's like basic kindergarten, you know, behavior. But evidently, there are some people in the world. And if you are today driving my car, I would love for you to return it. So actually, just bring my sunglasses back. That's really all I need. So they're like $10 from, I don't know. Anyway, just bring it back. That would be awesome. But here's what I've learned, though. I have learned, and honestly, this is not like a preacher, spiritual, pastor kind of answer. I have just learned, and I'm trying to help my kids know this. Hey, God is going to do something great through this. This really stinks, and it's really annoying, and it's kind of a thorn in the flesh. And it pales in comparison to what some of you have been through. Some of you have recently walked through a divorce. Some of you have recently walked through a job loss. Some of you have recently walked through a health diagnosis. Some of you have been walking through the most painful relational dynamics and situations in your family. And I don't know that you'll ever understand it. I don't know that there will ever be an explanation for it. But what I do know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is that God will use that situation to be a stage to elevate his power and his greatness, and he'll make something good out of it. It's just what he does. He's the only one I know who can take ashes and make beauty from them. And he can do that in your life. He can do that with your thorn in the flesh situation. And so what's amazing is Paul kind of shifts his perspective. You can see it almost in his writing. He's kind of extroverting this stuff. And he's like, you know what? I'm kind of excited about this now. Like, now that I realize I got this answer, that his grace is, it's made perfect, that it's sufficient, and his power is made perfect in my weakness, I'm kind of excited now. And look at what he writes. Next verse, he says, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly. He's like, I'm actually going to brag about my weakness. He's like, I'm going to get excited about my weakness so that Christ's power may rest on me. He says, I've realized now what's happening is, as I lift up my weakness to him, he brings down his power to me. It's the way the equation works. As you elevate your weakness, as you begin to lift up your weakness to him, he then brings his power down to you. And this is amazing that this happens, but in your natural weakness, he can let his supernatural power invade. He lets his supernatural power unleash on people who are readily willing to admit their natural weakness. Another way to say it is this, that our human weakness, it sets the stage for God's divine power. If you have a thorn in your flesh and you're willing to admit that you're weak, get ready. Because in your life, I really believe it is setting the stage for God to unleash his power. Now, some of you are thinking, I wish he would unleash his power to take it away from me. I do too. And I would love to pray with you for that end. But until then, I'm just telling you, what has happened has happened. It has, right? You know that. What's next? Well, what's next depends on how willing you are to lift up your weakness to him. And as you do, Paul says that he begins to bring his power down to those who are weak. He begins to put it on display. In fact, the next verse says something real similar. He says, that's why, for Christ's sake, for Jesus' sake, I delight. Now he's getting crazy. Now he's like, I'm starting to delight in my weakness. And then he lists them out. He says, I delight in weaknesses. I delight in insults. I delight in hardships. I delight in persecutions. I delight in difficulties. It's kind of like he gets done. He's like, I don't even know what any difficulty you have. I have learned to delight in the ones that have happened to me. Because, next verse, for when I am weak, then I am strong. This is powerful. He says that the pathway to experiencing the power of God begins when you can admit you're weak. When you can actually tell him or tell someone or write it down or pray it to him, God, I am weak. Because Jesus came not for the healthy, but he came for the sick. If you're strong and able, you have no use for God. But if you're weak and dependent and needy, you're in a perfect position to experience the power of God in your life. In fact, the first step that I want to just invite you to, I've tried to make this as easy as possible, as digestible as possible. And the first thing I would love to invite you to do is just to start here, to say, would you be willing to admit you're weak? Would you be willing to admit? I'm not saying you have to say it out loud. I'm not even saying put it on Facebook. Don't get crazy, okay? I'm just saying, would you be willing to admit to him, I'm weak. I'm weak. I need you, or I need something, but I'm weak. For some of you, what you're going through is so painful, it's so difficult. That's easy for you to do. You've already done this. For others of you, it's just more difficult to do. Weakness feels like a sign of weakness. Admitting you're weak feels like a cowardly thing to do. But our Father draws near to people who are willing to admit that they're weak. And if you could just begin there, I'm telling you, it's the pathway to experiencing his power. Would you admit you're weak? And then secondly, would you accept his grace? Would you just accept the grace that he gives? Not the one that you want, because this might look different. But would you be willing to say, God, if that's what you have for me, I'm trusting that you know my needs better than I do. And if all you're going to do is allow me to wake up today and breathe, I will accept that as your grace. If all you're going to do for me is you're going to allow me to make it through this day, I will accept that as your grace. I'm going to pray for more. I'm going to ask you for more. I'm going to beg you for more. But I'm just going to begin by admitting that I'm weak and saying, God, what grace are you providing for me today? How are you going to provide for what you think I need and what you think I need most? And I'm going to accept that. Would you be willing to accept not the grace you want, but to accept his grace for you? And then thirdly, would you be willing to wait for the fireworks? This is my favorite part. I love fireworks. I don't know if you like fireworks or not. If you're an American, if you're not, welcome to America. In our national anthem, we sing about fireworks. We love fireworks. We love lighting things on fire, and we love watching things in the sky. And this time of year, there's a lot of fireworks. The worst part about fireworks are waiting for the fireworks. You know what I'm saying? It's miserable waiting for the fireworks. My least favorite fireworks to wait for are Friday night fireworks at Braves games. Atlanta Braves, National League leading Atlanta Braves, you may have heard of them. They have fireworks at the end of their games on Friday nights, their home games, whether they win or whether they lose. And I have little kids, and so we've been to games on Friday night, and trying to convince everyone to wait for the fireworks, I have just found is a miracle that has yet to happen to us. We just can't do it. Because when you don't see them, you don't know. And so you don't realize, like, how good is this going to be? And so when you don't know, then you think, well, this feels hard and doesn't feel worth it, right? Because it's hot, and I'm hungry, and I'm tired, and I'm throwing a fit, and I'm not. I had one child I was holding, and I was like, well, let's get some food. And then she starts screaming. She says, all you care about is food, yelling it to the whole stadium, which is only half true, okay? I do care a lot about food, but that's not all I care about, okay? So pull it together. But they can't. I've just found that they can't. And waiting for the fireworks, it's so difficult. But usually what you find is when you wait for them and then you see them and then you're walking home, you go, wow, I'm glad we waited. I'm not talking about the homemade kind, you know, that your friend down the street is lighting. I'm talking about like legit show-worthy fireworks. You usually leave and you're like, wow, that was amazing. And the thing about God's fireworks is that they're not just for you. God wants to light off some beautiful fireworks in your life. I mean, an amazing display of his goodness, of his glory. And he wants to do it so that you can see. But the amazing thing about fireworks is that everyone around can see as well. God wants to set the stage in your life to put his power on display so that, yes, you could see and so that you might trust him more, but also so that everyone around you might be able to see. Everyone around you might be able to go, wow, to think that God would do all that in the middle of your mess, that is amazing. That's what he wants to do. And he can do it. And if you admit you're weak and accept his grace, you can experience those kinds of fireworks in your life. So many of you already have. So many of you have walked through all kinds of tragic situations and difficult trials and awful circumstances that we wouldn't wish on anyone. And I've seen God's grace at work in your life time and time again. And it's like a beautiful display of fireworks that everyone goes, wow, that is amazing. That must be the way God has provided for you. That must be God's glory on display. He wants to do that in your life. He genuinely does. And when he does, people are going to look at your life and say, wow, you're a wonder. I mean, you are, yes, a piece of work, but you are a wonder. I mean, you really are a wonder. Because being a wonder is not about being strong. Being a wonder is not about what's been handed to you. Being a wonder is about God using our weakness to do something wondrous. That's what being a wonder is all about. And just like Augie Pullman was a wonder, he could have stayed home. He could have not gone to school. He could have not faced the embarrassment, the bullying, the hard situations. But he kept moving. He kept taking steps. And because of that, he is a wonder. But you can be too. You can be a wonder. As you begin to admit you're weak, say, God, I can't. I can't get through this. This is awful. It's terrible. It's tragic. The pain is too difficult. As you begin to accept his grace, the grace that he wants to provide for what he has deemed you need most. And then as you just sit back and wait. And I'm not sugarcoating it. I know how difficult waiting is. Waiting is maybe the most difficult part. But as you sit back and wait, when those fireworks start to go off, I promise you, when it comes to our loving, kind Father, you will, in your heart, you will go, wow, this was worth waiting for. I'm not saying what happened was good. I'm not saying what happened was right. I'm not delighting in it or wishing that it would happen again. But I can honestly say that God has allowed his grace to be sufficient for me. And God has made his power perfect right here in the middle of my weakness. That's the way God works. And when you see that in your life, you too will realize what a wonder you are.